Good afternoon, everyone. And I just want to clarify, I'm actually from the Minneapolis Health Department. I don't want to take credit for something that's statewide. We're just in the city of Minneapolis at this point, but maybe someday soon. For my presentation today, I'm going to be focusing on talking about the Minneapolis Staple Foods Ordinance, which is an innovative policy approach to increasing access to healthy foods in retail settings. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, two of whom are here in the audience today, Dr. Melissa Laska, associate professor with the University of Minnesota, and Dr. Kevin Caspi, an assistant professor at the University of Minnesota. I have no relationships to disclose. So as many of you know, people are starting to demand healthy foods and are becoming more and more interested in making nutritious food choices when they shop for groceries and purchase snacks. In Minneapolis especially, there's a large movement and enthusiasm around healthy foods, and community feedback indicates that residents would like to have access to more healthy food options in their neighborhood stores, especially fresh fruits and vegetables. For example, a 2013 survey that the Minneapolis Health Department conducted found that 94% of Minneapolis corner store customers would buy fruits and vegetables at their neighborhood store if they were available and affordable and high quality. Some residents in Minneapolis have easy access to an abundant selection of healthy foods through traditional supermarkets and our great system of co-ops. But other residents, especially those that live in some of our lower income neighborhoods, have to rely on non-traditional grocery stores to meet their food needs. And those can include small corner stores, gas stations, dollar stores, and pharmacies. And in many of these non-traditional stores, it's much easier to find things like pop, chips, and candy than it is to find any healthy options. And we know that limited access to healthy foods is linked to poor health outcomes like obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. So there's a widespread movement in Minneapolis to make it easier for everyone to get healthy foods in their community. And it's not just government agencies like our health department or public health professionals who are interested in this work. It's also nonprofits, schools, parks, work sites, and other institutions who are involved in this movement. And these efforts, which include things like farm to school, EBT at farmers markets, and community gardens, are creating more of a demand for healthy foods and increasing access to affordable, healthy options. So the Minneapolis Staple Foods Ordinance is one piece of this broader approach to improving healthy food access within Minneapolis communities. So as a little bit of background on the ordinance, the Minneapolis City Council adopted the original Staple Foods Ordinance in 2008, and it was significantly revised last year in October 2014. It was the first, and it's currently the only policy of its kind in the country, although other communities are considering adopting something similar. And the ordinance sets a reasonable minimum standard for the amount and type of healthy foods that licensed grocery stores must stock without restricting the sale of any food items. And the goal of the ordinance is to help ensure that all Minneapolis residents have access to healthy foods no matter where they shop. So the original Staple Foods Ordinance that was adopted in 2008 required licensed grocery stores, which included supermarkets, co-ops, and most of your small corner convenience stores, required these stores to sell a small amount of basic food items in four main categories as a condition of their business license with the city. And those included fruits and vegetables, dairy, bread or cereal, and proteins. And if you're familiar with the SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program requirements, these looked very similar to the SNAP requirements. Many stores, however, were exempt from the original staple foods requirements, including most gas stations, dollar stores, pharmacies, and other general retail stores, even though they were selling significant amounts of food. So about a year after the original Staple Foods Ordinance was adopted, the Health Department assessed compliance in a small sample of corner stores and found that only 25% were meeting the Staple Foods Ordinance requirements. And I do want to note that the Health Department was not originally responsible for the implementation and enforcement of the ordinance. We were just looking at compliance so that we could figure out how to support store owners in complying with the ordinance. Implementation and enforcement was actually done through our business licensing department. So in talking with store owners, we identified a number of factors that contributed to a lack of compliance, including a limited understanding of the Staple Food Ordinance requirements, minimal communications from the city about the changes to the ordinance. No support available to help store owners learn how to comply with the requirements, and a lack of rigorous monitoring and enforcement of the ordinance. So as a result, stores had a limited amount of healthy food options available for their customers, and the fresh produce in particular was usually very low quality. And this led to customer expectations being very low. The demand for healthy foods remained low because customers didn't expect to be able to find affordable, high quality, healthy foods, especially fruits and vegetables, within these corner stores. And that really just led to store owners having the perception that nobody wanted to buy healthy foods. So these issues contributed to the original staple foods ordinance not having the desired impact, and even though there was a documented demand for healthy foods from the community. So in order to address these issues and to strengthen the ordinance, the Minneapolis Health Department led a process to adopt key revisions to the original ordinance language. We formed a cross-departmental work group and began drafting ordinance language in early 2013. And we were aided by the University of Minnesota School of Public Health, which has been a key partner on this effort over the past few years. So we gathered feedback and ideas from stakeholders through industry meetings with retail store owners, business association and community presentations, and a mass mailing to store owners. We also met with our city council members to educate them about the proposed ordinance changes in advance of a formal public hearing. And at that public hearing, we had testimony provided by community residents, store owners, and other stakeholders in support of the ordinance changes. And then in October of last year, 2014, the full city council unanimously voted to adopt the proposed revisions to the staple foods ordinance. So the key revisions to the ordinance included expanding the number of required food categories from the original four that I mentioned earlier to 10 required food categories, and setting specific quantity and variety minimums within each category. These requirements were based on the Women, Infants, and Children, or WIC, program standards, but they are more flexible to allow store owners the ability to meet their customers' cultural food preferences. The original ordinance was also revised to include better quality standards around fresh and perishable foods, and the language around exemptions was clarified and revised in order to limit the number of stores that were exempt from offering staple foods. So our revised ordinance currently requires stores to offer a minimum amount and variety of foods within these 10 categories, so everything from milk, cheese, and eggs down to whole grains, canned beans, and dried beans, peas, and lentils. And again, these are similar to the WIC standards, but not quite the same. So as an example of what our ordinance requires, we can look at the fruits and vegetables category. So stores are required to stock at least 30 pounds or 50 items of fresh or frozen fruits and vegetables, and at least seven varieties. They have to have at least seven varieties, and at least five have to be fresh. And no more than 50% of their total selection can come from a single variety. And the photo here shows what 30 pounds and seven varieties of fresh fruits and vegetables could look like. So it's actually a very reasonable amount for any store to stock on a continuous basis. As another example, we can take a look at the whole grains category. So stores are required to stock a total of 5 pounds of whole grain items and at least three varieties, such as 100% whole wheat bread, brown rice, corn tortillas, or oatmeal. The ordinance doesn't require any specific types of whole grains because we wanted to allow store owners the flexibility, again, to meet their customers' cultural food preferences by choosing the food that was most popular and appropriate within each category. And as a final example of what's required by the current ordinance, this is our milk category. Stores are required to stock a total of 5 gallons of milk in gallon or half gallon containers, and they have to have at least two healthier varieties. And they can choose from skim 1% or 2% milk, as well as plain or original soy milk and milk alternatives. And if you're interested in the details about the other categories that we require, there's more information available on our website, which I will link to at the end and on this slide. So Minneapolis currently has over 300 licensed grocery stores, and 238 of these stores are now required to meet the staple food requirements, including all of our supermarkets and co-ops, as well as most corner stores, gas stations, dollar stores, pharmacies, and general retail stores. There's only 68 stores that are exempt from the staple food requirements, and you can be exempt if you meet one of the three exemption criteria outlined in the ordinance language. So you can be exempt if you are classified as an accessory use store, which is a very narrow definition that can apply to certain types of stores that are selling a specific type of food product or have food as another part of their primary business, as long as they don't accept SNAP or WIC. You can also be exempt if you're a store located in our central commercial district of downtown Minneapolis, or if you're a very small gas station with less than 300 square feet. So the revised staple foods ordinance went into effect on April 1st of this year. And for the entire first year, the health department is focusing on the phase that we call implementation without enforcement. So we're conducting regular store visits to all 238 stores to provide education and conduct inventory assessments. And we're providing group trainings and individual consultations, as well as presentations to businesses and neighborhood associations, and connecting people to helpful resources. Enforcement of the ordinance will not begin until April 1st of 2016. So we wanted to give store owners ample time to learn about the new requirements and transition and make new purchasing decisions so that they had the right types of foods stocked in their stores before we started to enforce it with our standard citations and fines. So we knew it wasn't enough to just pass a policy. We also wanted to make sure that we had a comprehensive package of resources available for store owners to help them comply with the ordinance. So we created various resources, including free in-store merchandising and promotional supplies, like a poster that you see here. We also created written reference materials about the ordinance requirements in multiple languages. And we've made available mentors at other model stores, people who are already successfully selling staple foods that can help train other store owners. We also knew that procurement, fresh produce in particular, was a sticking point for many small retail store owners. So we've worked very hard to develop a viable small-scale produce procurement option, which I can go into in more detail if anyone is interested in the question and answer time. We've also provided access to low-interest loans for refrigeration because cooler equipment for perishable items can be something that's lacking in some of these non-traditional grocery stores. And we also know that community outreach and promotion is important because you want to increase the demand as well as increase the supply of healthy food. So as I mentioned before, one of our key partners is the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. And Dr. Melissa Laska and Caitlin Caspi are here today if you have questions about the evaluation of the staple foods ordinance. We do have funding from the NIH and the CDC for a multi-year evaluation. And we'll be looking at a variety of outcomes, including healthy food availability in these stores that are impacted by the ordinance. And they're doing that through store assessments. We're also looking at customer purchases and shopping habits through customer intercept surveys, looking at stocking practices and decision-making around healthy food in stores through store manager interviews, and looking at healthy home food availability for frequent corner store shoppers through a home food inventory. The ordinance evaluation began in early 2014 with some formative work to assess the food inventory in stores that were impacted by the ordinance. And this early work was also designed to test the feasibility of proposed evaluation measures and the process for collecting data in the study sample of stores. So I'm going to go back to that. The evaluation really began in earnest last fall when university researchers began collecting baseline data prior to the ordinance going into effect. And the research team is currently collecting 4-month post-policy data and will also collect data at 12 and 24 months after the policy has been implemented. So I just want to wrap up by sharing some of our lessons that we've learned throughout this process of developing and implementing this innovative policy. We've really found that seeking input from industry representatives and community members early and often helped us to develop strong but realistic standards and generate buy-in from the very beginning. We also learned that it was important to highlight to stakeholders that the policy was developed and would continue to be driven by rigorous research and data from a trusted academic institution. That was a big selling point for our elected officials. And we learned that the policy was more appealing to stakeholders when they knew that it was embedded within a broader movement to improve healthy food access. It wasn't just a standalone ordinance that was targeting business owners. And in terms of policy implementation, we're learning that rolling out the policy and enforcement over the course of a year is giving us ample time to communicate the changes with store owners and make sure that they have enough time to transition before enforcement goes into effect. So in terms of my recommendations then, I would just say that in our experience, we took a long time to revise the policy language. And that was really important in terms of giving people enough time to feel comfortable with the changes, to weigh in on the changes, and make sure that it was a very transparent process. We also would recommend framing the ordinance in terms of how stores can benefit. We've gotten a lot of stores to kind of buy into this policy by showing them how close they can get to meeting WIC requirements, which can serve as another revenue source for their small store. We also recommend trying to demonstrate consumer demand and the need for healthy foods through data and personal stories. Again, that's really important in convincing elected officials what kind of action to take in terms of their policies. And we would recommend that you build in time for store education and training before enforcement begins, again, just to give everyone ample time to make sure that they know what's going on so there's no confusion. And the final recommendation is to create a strong support system to really help stores succeed. We've had a lot of positive feedback from our store owners about the amount of time and energy that we've invested in providing training and education on the front end. They're not really used to that from the city's regulatory perspective, so that's helped to build strong relationships with our store owners as well. So more information about the ordinance is available on our website, minneapolismn.gov/staplefoods, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. Yes?
Kind of a legal question. How did you ground or get legal standing to the ordinance? Did you have to cite corner stores as a potential hazard to the health of the community, and therefore you have to have this ordinance to help them? Because you have to, it seems like logically you have to have established that stores play a major role in public health, and therefore the city has a right, a duty, not to intervene. So I'm just trying to compare county, so if you have this issue, how do you ground that? How does this survive in the past?
It's a good question.
Can you repeat?
Yes, the question was, what's the legal standing for being able to do a policy like this? Is there some way they have to demonstrate that there's a public health reason to be involved? It's a great question. I'm not sure what the conversation was back in 2008 around the original ordinance. It was proposed not because it was a public health issue, it was actually proposed by our licensing department as a way to address public safety. There were activities going on at these small stores that that the community didn't like, and so they wanted to introduce some standards around what stores had to stock in order to kind of weed out the bad characters and create better partners within the community. So it really wasn't a public health motivation that got the original ordinance into play, but I can see that that would be something that if you're just starting from a public health perspective that you would have to take into account. I don't have a good answer for you. In the back?
What about cost? When you do the monitoring, are you looking at the range of costs? Because I can imagine some of the stores might jack up prices quite high. So I'm just curious if there's a way to track that.
Yes. I believe that is part of the University of Minnesota's evaluation. They are looking at cost as one of their variables that they're assessing in stores, and so we will have some information about that.
And are they being required to stay within a certain cost frame?
They are not. I'm sorry, are they required to stay within a certain cost frame was the question. No, the ordinance does not mention anything about the cost. It just says what types of items that the stores have to stock. Those business decisions are left up to the individual proprietors. Yes?
Can you provide more information on the small-scale procurement that you mentioned on your presentation? And also, I'm just curious to know, how many of the stores did you work with a WIC approved and through this process, or any of the stores WIC approved?
Good questions. So he asked if I could talk a little bit more about the procurement option that I mentioned, and then also if I knew how many WIC stores were there at the beginning, and then if any had become WIC certified as a result. The procurement option, we've worked really closely with a local produce supplier as well as students at a local university, and they have come up with a business model that they anticipate being a viable for-profit business. And they deliver fresh produce to participating corner stores on a weekly basis, and they have wholesale prices that are very competitive with other wholesale suppliers in the area, but they're able to offer a small amount of produce at any given time. You don't have to have a minimum order like you do with other larger suppliers. So they're working very successfully with about 15 corner stores, or they did this past season, and they are poised to expand significantly in the coming year. And it could also create a new market for other types of businesses, similar businesses that can meet that procurement need for these small stores. In terms of WIC stores, I don't have the number offhand. I have it in my notebook. I can find it for you later. There were a number of probably, I don't even want to guess, WIC stores. So we expect that throughout the implementation of the ordinance that more stores will get very close to being able to meet the WIC requirements. And we are promoting that as a benefit of the policy, that they can possibly achieve this additional revenue stream if they meet the staple foods ordinance and then just go a little bit above and beyond that.
Thank you.
Time for one more question. The question was about the home food inventory. I'm not sure I'm the best person to speak about that. Again, Dr. Laska here and Dr. Caspi could provide more information about that, maybe.
So we, as part of our ongoing evaluation of the ordinance, we're, Caitlin said, we're assessing customers through exit interviews as they come out of stores to look at their purchasing, and then we're recruiting frequent corner store shoppers to be a part of a sub-study where we go into their home and look at their home food availability, with the hopes of trying to see, do these corner store purchases translate into different kinds of things that are available within the home? So we're looking at corner store shoppers in Minneapolis compared to corner store shoppers in St. Paul, which is the city that's immediately adjacent to Minneapolis, but not subject to the ordinance. So it's kind of a longitudinal case comparison analysis.
Thank you very much.